Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I will be your host today. This is another program in our ongoing coverage of the Casey Anthony trial. And what a week it has been. Joining me in the studio is my wife, Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Simon, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
I still want to know why I am still waiting for breakfast in bed.
Well, you're in Canada, that's why. I mean, they unless they had to send it, you know, have somebody catered or something to come over here for you.
I think that's a particularly poor excuse, but, you know, we will move on.
Well, I have one question, which was my blog. Why is Mother's Day more important than Father's Day?
Mothers for mothers.
Oh, I see. That's like women are women and men are men. I don't understand that either.
As always, we're joined by a formidable panel from the City of Angels. We have attorney Manny Barling. Manny, welcome.
Well, good morning, or should say good afternoon to everybody.
And I have to admit that I had a good chuckle at your wife's expense yesterday. I extended an invite to her to join today's panel, and she literally ran a mile.
My wife's views are somewhat to the right of Jan's. <You know. laughs>
All right, I am so totally lost here.
No, I mean in terms of how to deal with Casey Anthony and with the death of a child or a sibling is involved. Or she has very, very strong feelings, as you do, Jan.
Oh, well, I would expect that from any mother, woman, period.
From up in New York, we have the vacationing crime doctor, Denny Griffin. Denny, welcome.
Good afternoon, everybody, and happy Father's Day.
Well, welcome to you, and happy Father's Day, and I do hope that the vacation is going well.
It's going very well, Simon. Thank you very much.
Good. From Ground Zero, Orlando, Florida, we have Orlando Magazine journalist Dave Knackle. Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Simon, and hello, everyone. Happy Father's Day.
And Dave, you are getting famous. I saw that you got a mention on the CNN website. Hell, before long, you won't even want to hang out with us regular folks.
Well, you know, I'll tell you. The woman from CNN who called me up, she wanted to hang around with me. And I'll tell you one thing, they're nice people at CNN. They're really gracious and they treated me well. So, yeah, I'm very pleased with that. It didn't hurt a bit. But I'll still be the same old Dave no matter what. I don't think.
What a shame, Dave. We were hoping you were going to change.
The only thing I change is I change my pants every day, you know. That's about it.
Okay, and from Fort Lauderdale, which I believe I mispronounced, it's called Fort Lickerdale. we have the always colorful bail bondsman William Cobra Storbs. Cobra, welcome to you.
Simon, thank you so much. Like I said, happy Father's Day to all the fathers.
because I want to tell whoever answered that question before, why is Mother's Day more important than Father's Day? Because Mama's usually taking care of Papa 364 days out of the year. Least we could do is one back for him, right?
Cobra's being politically correct. Everybody should notice that.
Cobra has never been politically correct in his entire life.
I didn't know how to spell it. I didn't know how to spell it.
Okay. As always, our chat room is open, and we do invite our listeners to ask their questions of the panel, but please be respectful of each other. Yeah, different people have different opinions. On with the program. It was an important week. The prosecution rested their case. Dave, do you think the prosecution did a good job?
Absolutely. Especially with Dr. Spitz. Punny or anything like that. But basically with Spitz, Ashton chewed him up and spit him out.
Okay. No, not the defense case. The prosecution case.
Oh, you mean on the in other words, this is before the prosecution. Before the prosecution rested on Wednesday.
Right.
Well, you know, a lot of people thought that. I kind of figured there would be more in there, and they didn't bring up, for example, the. Cell phone pings. There are a lot of things the state didn't bring up. And I talked to Anthony Colarossi, who's one of the senior reporters for the Orlando Sentinel. We discussed things, and he said, you know, they still have a chance to do all that on rebuttal. I'm sure they still have quite an arsenal. So, but meanwhile, yes, I think the state did an excellent job. I think they've got the jury pretty much where they want them at the moment.
Denny, would you concur?
I concur. Yes, I admittedly am pro prosecution on this, and I was pleased when they rested their case. I mean, I agree with Dave. I thought there might be more. Obviously, they have a strategy in mind, and I'm sure these are very intelligent people on the prosecution team. They. Kind of like a chess match, and I'm sure they have their moves planned of what they will do in any particular contingency, depending on what the defense does. But I thought that they did what they had to do, and I'm satisfied, more than satisfied, with their performance so far.
Okay. I'm going to go around the table here. Cobra, do you think the prosecution did what they needed to do?
Absolutely not.
Mr. Cobra?
Yes? They didn't prove their case. You got me?
Yep.
They didn't bring forth half of their opening. I don't think they brought forth enough. And in fact, they did not establish for me. I mean, look... You know, every time I say something going one way, they think, oh, you're on the side of the girl. I hope they juice them all up. But if you're going to play court, you need to play it right. And I don't think that they put their case on, and I think they're going to let Baez step into it by himself. I don't think that they did enough. And I think that the defense definitely held their own, shooting them down every chance they got.
Okay. Jen, you're an opinionated woman.
Yeah. No,
okay.
I think they did present a very good case, and I think they're going to come back with rebuttal for everything that they missed.
Yeah,
they
that's pretty much
to.
What I think, you know.
I'd like to add to that, Simon, is did you see the argument that was put on by the defense after the state rested. I think that the judge, I mean, I like the guy. He seems to be pretty fair, but I think the defense made a very solid, formidable argument, and I think there was a lot of time spent putting that argument together, and I believe that it was discarded way too easily. I do not believe that they brought forth their case. You know, you have to ask Manny, but I don't think that they didn't ring the bell for me.
Okay, and you just offered me the perfect segue. You got to ask the legal eagle, Manny. You know, what are your views? Did the prosecution do what they needed to do?
Well, I thought yes and no. I thought the prosecution put on a very basic nuts and bolts case, which is what they wanted to do. Do I agree with that strategy? I'm not privy to what cards they're holding, but I got a pretty good idea at yesterday. So when you get to talking about, or from Thursday on, defense putting on, it became clear to me they were laying in the weeds and came to a conclusion their best case would be better served if they counterpunched the defense as witnesses, something that you and I discussed earlier about how the trend of this case would go. Because if you recall, I predicted that they would shorten their case, get the defense to put their case on as quick as possible so they could attack it as quick as possible. And that's basically what they've done.
All right. There's something that kind of bothers me. The prosecution is tasked with proving the case. The defense doesn't have to do anything if they don't want to. And I'm not sure that they presented an A through Z storyline. You know, the use of the tattoo guy as the last witness. Yeah, it was fun. We got to see the tat. But was it useful? Was it powerful? Manny, would you have taken that strategy?
I'm not even sure it was of any importance to the case, but again, they may have a strategy and a reason for doing this that we don't see. One of the things I pointed out earlier is it's easy to get these cases started, and it's hard to know when to stop them. And I thought in this case, the plaintiff, the prosecution, had difficulty determining when they needed to stop and move on. And that was their weakness. I think they went back to the office and said, you know, we'd be better off if we quit a day earlier. And I think that's what happened to them.
Dave, would you concur with that view?
Yes. Yes, I do. Hang on, I'm answering someone here on the panel, on the chat.
Yeah, if I can come back for a second. You know,
go ahead.
What happens many times when you're trying cases, you have this nice little ribbon you want to put on something at the very end that you think is this absolutely terrific close. Kind of like a movie where the director feels like he's got the perfect ending to his movie and the audience rejects it. And that's sort of what I thought was happening with this, is that he thought, or the prosecution thought, they had this little wrapped up tight little ending for their case and it didn't work.
You know, I'm surprised that they didn't, I really am surprised that they didn't, you know, pace themselves so that they could end on the 16th, Thursday the 16th, which would be the third anniversary of Kaylee's death.
Yeah, but
so to me, that would have been very appropriate.
Yeah, but you can't say that to a jury.
Well,
so
they don't have to. They basically imply, you know, they could imply it. Because they did directly tell the jury that June 16th was the day of her death, and so did the defense in their opening statement. The defense claimed June 16th. So the date is there. So I don't know why they couldn't claim it at the end. It was already out there.
Well, yes,
but, you know what I mean?
But you can't claim anything until final argument. In other words, you know, you can't just get up and make a proclamation during this phase of the trial.
Well, but the thing is, well, what about, like, when the defense, can't they sit there and acknowledge that this is the day the defense said Kaylee died? Which
no,
they
they've got to get somebody to say it on the stand. In other words, somebody has to stand up there and make that statement for it to work. In other words, the prosecution nor the defense counsel can just stand up and start making statements without consequences.
Okay. So what they say in the opening statement is not legally bound or anything like that?
No, it's not evidence, no.
Yeah, okay. I didn't know that they couldn't use that.
Dave, if you keep it up, you already got rid of the judge. You're fixing to get rid of the case.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, you know, that people that think that I'm a stoolie for the defense, that the defense pays me money to do this, you know, it's like, wow, I paid, you know, they paid me an awful lot of money to get Judge Perry on the bench, didn't they? What a smart move.
Very smart move
by this intelligent defense.
Stricter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Strickland, yeah.
All right, Denny.
Yes.
Do you think that the prosecution did what they needed to do?
Yeah. You know, I agree. I guess with Dave and Manny, maybe they could have ended a tad earlier. Maybe they reevaluated their presentation in the office after court one day and said, hey, I think Manny said, you know, maybe it's time to wrap this thing up. And I'm anticipating, assuming, and I know what can happen when you assume, but I'm assuming, you know, from what I've seen of this prosecution team, that as Manny has mentioned a couple of times, they have a strategy in place, I'm sure. I don't think this was the end of the ballgame. And I guess with the discovery rules in Florida, they know virtually everybody that is on the Baez or the defense witness list. They've deposed everybody. They pretty much know what they're going to say or might say. And I'm sure they have a plan depending on, you know, who actually gets called, who doesn't. And I understand Culver's point, you know, that he said that they didn't ring the bell for him, the prosecution. But the way I see it is that Baez and his associates, yes, they did what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to attempt to discredit the prosecution evidence and witnesses, and they tried. I don't think they were effective. So that's my point. I think they tried.
Whoa.
Let's just
stick with the prosecution case.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
well, that's what I'm doing.
Cobra said
they didn't ring the Cobra was talking about the prosecution. He said they didn't ring the bell for him. I said I see it differently. I think they rang the bell for me, and I disagree with Cobra's point. I understand what he said. I just don't think they succeeded. So I'm satisfied with what the prosecution did.
All right, and I'm going to annoy my wife. And seeing as it's Father's Day, I think I'm not too scared of getting beaten once we get off the air. Jen, do you think that the prosecution hit the spot?
I'm not sure what you're asking. I'm sorry, I was doing something else.
Do you think the prosecution put forward a case that the jury swallowed?
Yes, I do. Sorry, but yes, I do.
All right.
Maybe not to get the death penalty, but yes, I think they can get her charged with first-degree murder.
All right. I have a couple of issues. I'm not really convinced that the prosecution put on a truly cohesive case. for instance, they made no mention of where the crime happened. There was innuendo, an innuendo about the murder weapon, duct tape, and possibly chloroform, but nothing that, you know, you can stand up and go, hey, you know, this is how it happened. Dave, did you spot that
potential, now, wait a minute.
Problem?
Now, wait a minute. Brief me on that again, Simon. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. The prosecution story. Number one, is it cohesive? Because little problems. They do not mention the actual crime scene, and there's mere innuendo as to the method of murder.
Well, I don't think they can prove the method of murder, for one thing. They can't prove where the murder occurred. To be honest, they can't prove it was a murder other than circumstantial evidence that seems to add up. You know, I'm not one that likes to compare cases, but you take a look at Scott Peterson, and mainly it was his attitude, you know, and the girlfriend, and, you know, what they found out about the guy that convicted him of circumstantial evidence. They didn't find a murder weapon. They don't even know where the murder weapon is, or where the murder occurred. But except for the fact that circumstantially he fishes where the area where the body was found. I mean, you know, that's huge. And I think there are a lot of pieces of circumstantial evidence that, although singularly they're not enough, together they add up to something huge.
Okay. Manny, you have spent more hours in courtrooms than should be legal. Do you think that they've put together a cohesive case?
Well, let me distinguish something for you. There's a time to argue a case, and there's a time in which you put up facts. The prosecution cannot just stand up and argue their case at any point of the case. So to get up and try to say someone is aware it was murdered, they were murdered, is really a function for argument. So they're at a phase of the case where they just can't stand up and do that. And I agree very much with the statement that it's not uncommon in these cases to not know where they were murdered. And where this comes into real importance is with Simon's comment about the defense not having to do anything to prove the case because the burden falls on the prosecution. Well, that's not entirely true. As I point out, that there's a natural tendency to shift burdens, and this may be one of the classic cases where I see the burden being shifted, where at some point to get out of this case, Casey Anthony has to explain why her child disappeared for this long period of time. And she's not going to be able to do this without taking the stand. But if she takes the stand, any hopes of a child manslaughter case is gone, and she's headed for the death penalty. So basically, if they don't put testimony on, they basically in a position where they can't explain anything in the case, and they really don't have anything to argue to the jury except the prosecution failed. And that's why it is important when we move over to the defense's case to show what the prosecution's theory, strategy was. The strategy is we have to ask only direct questions and we can't lead witnesses. But when we cross-examine, we have a great deal of latitude to do a number of different things and techniques. So they have intended for a long time to prove their case to the defendant's experts because they can ask them questions they can't ask their own witnesses. I hope that makes sense to people.
Oh, it does indeed. But I have two questions. I I liked what the prosecution did. I thought it was enough to prove guilt, but there were two people ominous from not being part of the case. Dave, why didn't they bring on Roy Kronk? I mean, he's the guy that found the body. I mean, they had everyone and their dog involved in this.
Because
not Kronk.
No, because he's a defense witness. The prosecution is going to get their chance with him. They didn't need to bring him on because the defense already said in their opening statement that that they were going to, you know, prove that Kronk is tied into this murder. Okay, fine, prove it. You know, and then once the defense offers their story, if the state doesn't know exactly what the defense is going to offer, then they don't know how to counter yet. So I think they're going to sit there and wait and hear what the defense has to say. And then I think Ashton's going to come along because he's the pulpit bully, but he's very good at what he does. And by being a bully, he's just disproving anything the defense has to say. I mean, I was very impressed with that man. You know, so I think they're going to be able to take care of Kronk.
Denny, were you surprised that the prosecution didn't have Kronk on the witness list?
I was. I'm going to tell you the truth. I was anticipating him, and when he wasn't, I started trying to think of why, and I came up pretty much with the idea that Dave has, is that they're anticipating he's going to be called by the defense, and that at that point they will make their points, whatever it is they need to make, when they cross him when he's on as a defense witness. That was the explanation that came to mind for me after I gave it some thought.
Now, how about you, Cobra?
Well, I think that if the prosecution had a called Kronk, it would have kind of let the cat out of the bag a little too fast. And I think, like Dave said, the prosecution is going to sit back and see just what and where the defense is going to go with Kronk, because they've got to overcome one major obstacle there, and that's from his call-in when he said, hey, I was out here on Suburban. First, he was out there twice, once in August and then again in December, and says he kicked a bag and a skull rolled out of it. Well, we all know that that's a bona fide lie. So I think that the prosecution would be happy if the defense does not call Kronk. But unfortunately, they're just going to sit back and wait to wing this one off the hip. That's my take on it.
And it's an interesting theory. Jan, do you have any thoughts on Mr. Kronk?
Yeah, I've got plenty, but I've got mixed feelings. I mean, it can go several different ways. It's your choice, you know. You can believe it or you can't believe it. Or, I mean, there's a lot of different things that you can say that you could pull in, say that he would have been involved. Then there's a lot of different reasons that you can say he wasn't.
I think the main reason that he was not called, Jan, is because I think if the prosecution had called him, I think there would have been an immediate, if not forthcoming, mistrial, because you have to ask yourself a question. How did he know? And I don't believe that crap that he pulled up underneath a tree to go relieve himself. I think that there was attorney-client privilege broken at the jail by his girlfriend who passed the information to him, and I think if the prosecution had called it in, then there would be some big shindig going on in the courtroom, because I believe that the attorney-client privilege, I think somebody was eavesdropping him and passed that information to Kronk, because he went out there twice, and, you know, he rumbled around in the woods pretty good the first time. If you listen to all of the accounts that him and Dominic Casey had going back and forth with each other, it is very possible that somewhere along the lines he may have put his finger on the scale, so to speak.
Well, I believe that is a possibility, but I don't believe Baez is part of the story, though.
I wouldn't cross Baez off. I mean, who do they all work for, basically? Baez. So his investigator was out there. Baez's investigator was out there as well, looking with Hoover. So there's a attorney-client privilege broken somewhere, whether Baez did it himself, whether he was eavesdropped on, and, you know, because I don't think that originally his investigators was working hand-in-hand with Crump. But it seems very peculiar that they allowed Crump to find the body, and there's something missing there.
Okay, look, I want to move on. The second person that I found it interesting, but he wasn't called to the stand. I mean, let's face it, the prosecution put on just about every boyfriend Casey had ever had. There was no sign of Jesse Grund. Dave, do you read anything into that?
Well, you know, Cobra's the one who would know more about whether they're on the defense witness list. But, you know, it was like Diane Tennis told me. She was Dominic Casey's attorney. And then I saw that she was coming to some of the hearings, and on several occasions we sat together. And she's like really a defense attorney who really, really is, you know, anti-prosecution. But I asked her about Dominic, you know, and she said, you know, the state doesn't want him. They're done with him. They don't need him. And sure enough, he hasn't been called to testify. Now, will the defense call him? I don't know if he's on that list, but I would certainly talk to Cobra about anybody that, if the Grunts are on any list. But they might, you know, be out of it. Who knows? Unless the defense tries to go with one of the Grunts as being guilty or something. But they didn't say that in their opening statement, so I don't know.
And in fact, Cobra, I'm going to put that ball in your court. I do know that Jesse and Richard Grund are indeed on the witness list for the defense. Have you any, you know, update on what's going on?
Well, correcting Dave there, he said Dominic. We're talking about Jesse, I assume. We're still talking about Jesse.
Well, no, I said Jesse. Dominic was one that the state didn't utilize, and the attorney, his attorney said that the state wasn't going to use him. So that was my bringing up with the Grunts that you would be, that's the only one I know of. So they're not going to use Dominic Casey, and they didn't. Okay, now what about the Grunts? The prosecution didn't use them, but are they on a defense witness list?
Well, here's the thing. If they was to put Jesse or Richard on, if the prosecution had done that, it would have been another one of those Crump missions. We do believe that Baez is going to put them both on the stand. However, he may not, because it could go either way. He could sink the prosecution, or he could sink the defense, either which way. But one thing that we do believe, we believe that they were put on the prosecution, or they're actually put on the list for one purpose and one purpose only, to stop them from talking, period and simple, because there's so much that they know. And if you're on the witness list, you cannot go on. I mean, 20, 48 hours, half a dozen of them have wanted Grund, Richard, many times to come on, but he can't because his name's on the list to come to testify. Now, at one point, he was going to be a rebuttal witness in the event certain issues were made that he had direct knowledge of. But right now, it's anybody's guess as to what Baez's, you know, old hat trick is. And right at the moment, I think personally, he's on the list to stop him from talking. However, with the change of events and things that are happening, I think that they're not going to have any choice but to do one of two things: put their own client on the stand, or put Richard or Jesse or both on the stand to keep her off. There's been a lot of talk in the press about, will Casey take the stand? If she does, Baez may lose his license. Because we joked about it last week, Denny and I. Yeah, put her on the stand. Yeah, I did it, or I didn't do it, and we'll believe her. You know, because she lies so much anyway. But short of her going on the stand, I think some of the rebuttals are going to have to come in, and either Jesse's going to have to do it, because you have to understand that right at the time when all this blew up, Richard was right there, and so was Jesse, and they were running back and forth, and of course they tried to frame Jesse because he was so close to the investigation. They tried to go ahead and put the murder on him, and that didn't work out too well. So there is going to be something pop off, and if it doesn't pop off, I think the civil trial is going to be much larger than this criminal trial anyway. So either way, we're going to get the day in the sunshine. Believe that.
Okay. Denny, were you surprised that neither Kronk nor Jesse were called to the stand, you know, by the defense?
By the prosecution?
By the prosecution.
Yes, I was. And like I was saying about Mr. Kronk, I spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out what the reason would be. Again, with the Grunts, Cobra obviously is more familiar with what they know and what they could have brought to the prosecution case and what they could bring to the defense case than I am. But, certainly these people, Kronk and the Grunts, are a couple of the key players, or three of the key players here. So for the prosecution not to call them, I can only surmise they had some valid reason. Is it saving for rebuttal? Is it an ambush thing, hoping that that Baez and the defense team will get him up there and open some doors? I think Manny mentioned earlier that the prosecution was limited on what they could ask on when they're their own witnesses. They got more latitude when they're a defense witness. So I've just got to assume there's some logical reason for what they did, but I don't know what it is.
Manny, do you see an ambush in the future?
Well, I think it's a little different issue. Assuming for a moment neither one testifies at all, how would it hurt the case? So that's the bigger issue. Are they mandatory in this case? Does it really matter? And that's one of the issues the prosecution may have to decide. You know, what does it really matter whether you put these people on or not? Is it going to change the outcome of the case? Do we have to be concerned about anything? And what will they really contribute? Is it cumulative? In other words, are we just adding more material that other people have already said? And there may not have been a risk-benefit for them, so they sat back and said, well, let's just see what the other side does, because maybe they won't call them at all. So it's quite possible the two of them could out-strategize each other, and they may never be called at all. And assuming that for a moment, what difference would it make? And I look at it, and I ask myself that from what little I've been able to glean from it, and I'm not as close as everyone else is to that particular testimony, but I've asked myself a couple of times, okay, so they come in, they testify. What is it they could say that would alter the outcome of the case? Because if there was something, they would have been dealt with as a more important witness. And I go back to Cobra, who I also agree with, that the best way to shut up a witness is to put them on your witness list, because then they can't talk. They got to be careful what they say. And, of course, a lot of people become very concerned when they're put on a witness list. So guess what? You now have a pseudo reign of terror. So that's not so bad either.
Let me ask you something, Manny, if I may. You know, a lot of people through this whole ordeal, you know, I call it an ordeal because it's been going on a long time. And
well, it is
an ordeal. People have been frustrated and angered, you know, yeah. At no time did anyone try and express who the father was. And one of the things that I've said all along is that it doesn't matter who the father was.
I agree.
You know, the girl's dead. I mean, the FBI, the police, they're not interested in who the father was. They're interested in who killed the girl.
Yeah.
And that's their only,
it's a red herring. I couldn't agree with you more. It's just something to distract the jury and everyone else. But is it important? I keep asking myself, well, so what? So you go prove this. What does it matter? Why is it important? What does it contribute to the case? And I find it difficult to find anything that contributes to the case. And if I'm wrong, I wish one of you would please tell me.
The only thing I could add to that, Manny, is whether it was an accident or whether it was a murder, flat-out cold-blooded murder, it's like I said, the child's still dead. And incidentally, you know, all her little animals, I'm going to deter from, I'm going to distract this a little bit just to get this in there. But all her little animals that were buried, and the key word here is buried, were buried out there off Suburban Drive. And they were also dressed up the same kind of way with little heart stickers and all that, but they were buried. I mean, this child didn't even deserve a burial in this girl's mind. She just chunked her out there like garbage. And in saying that, you know, before I'd put on the story, where did you think the defense was going to go with this? I believe that they should go with the accidental drowning. The dogs hit on the spots. This happened. It's a perfect case for an accidental drowning. Now, I didn't know they were going to take it as far as they did and have George coming around the corner of the house with a freaking body in her hand and all that. They should have asked me. I'd have said, look, leave that out. You're doing pretty good with the rest of this. But it is not beyond my comprehension to believe that this was a cold-blooded, calculated murder to keep Cindy Anthony from getting this child, period and simple, because the night, and here's why Jesse's testimony is important, and so is Richard's. The very night that she had choked the crap out of Casey, the neighbors called 911 after Lee told Jesse word for word verbatim what they had conversated about, included with this choking. And one of the things was Cindy said, that's it. I'm taking this child. Watch and see, mark my word, by God, it's on now. And she tried to adopt this child before and everything, so this time she's put it down and dropped the mantle and said, that's it, I'm taking this child, okay? So we'll see your ass tomorrow, whatever. So I believe, and so do some other people, that she actually went out and said, bullshit, mom's not getting this fucking child, and I'm going to kill it. And I think that, you know, if you ask me what I really believe, I believe that she actually killed the child to keep Cindy from getting it. Now, Richard Grund's testimony is going to be very important, because the very night, 2 days later or whenever, when Cindy's doing all her boo-hooing and all her crazy shit, she makes a statement that I've lost the granddaughter and now I've lost my daughter. Well, her daughter wasn't in jail at that time. The daughter wasn't found at that time. So they knew, and Richard's testimony is going to be that they knew that this child was dead long before they found the body. So all this hocus-pocus running around with signs and you get off my property and all this crap is going to be out there. Also, there's going to be some testimony brought in with this Hinkle duct tape. Now, Padilla, which pisses us off, because if we tell him something in confidence, then he goes and blurbs it out on the freaking news because I think he wants to get into the courtroom. And that's not going to be a good place for him to get to. And the other night he was out snooping around the Anthony's place, you know, for whatever, with a film crew and doing all kinds of stupid shit. But he blurbs out, I know where they kept the duct tape. I know where they kept it. And one of the things that was brought up by the prosecution witnesses this week, or maybe defense, I lost track of who was on first, but they were saying, did you find any Hinkle duct tape, or did you find this particular duct tape? Then they were cross-examining Cindy all about these duct tapes, and she went to red, blue, green, black, purple, polka dotted. Oh, and there was some silver, too. So I think that some of this testimony, the prosecution, kind of sitting back, they're not, they're, you know, the defense already claimed these as their witnesses, so they're not really, like Dave said, or like, excuse me, like Manny said, they're not allowed to, you know, go full bore with them unless they're their own witnesses. They have more leeway. So if Baez does call them, it's a loaded barrel. It could go either way, in meaning right, in the public view of the jury, because then a line's going to be drawn out there to show that, man, what a dysfunctional family. What hatred. You know, what in the hell is going on over here? The whole, you know, and that's why I said, everybody says, well, you think she ought to get off. I think it's like the O.J. Simpson trial. If you put your finger on the scale, then we'll have to get you again later, because I think justice is supposed to work. You can't go manipulating the system. And, you know she did it. We don't need to cheat it. You know, we don't need to get caught cheating here. But I think a manifold, and that's a device that one pipe feeds into and then feeds out in four or five other pipes or 100 pipes. And I think there's other people that need to, if she gets injected, I think a few other folks need to get injected right along beside her, because apples don't fall very far from that tree.
Well, Cover, I'm glad you had nothing to really say about this. You know, I agree with a great deal of what you say, not knowing the people as well as you do. But the point is, no one else is on trial but her. So
that's right.
All that focus is on her. And the only and if someone discovered some activity that they felt was questionable, it would have to come up in another trial. And they would also have to be careful of a mistrial. So in many respects, they're sort of moving along some very delicate, delicate territory.
Yes, but let's suppose, Manny, just in case, that you were in my position over here, and let's suppose, just for argument's sake, there's a whole lot of things I can't tell you that I know for a fact are going to blow up like a dadgum Chinese Roman candle set fire on the ass end. But also, don't be surprised if there won't be arrest immediately following this trial, and there'll be people brought up on some very, very serious, serious charges following this trial. They did not want to do it at this juncture, tampering with evidence, doing all kinds of stuff, lying to law enforcement, their involvements in different things, because they didn't want to murder, bloody the waters there, so to speak, dirty the waters. But believe that the prosecution is kind of walking a fine line there, because they do have, I would almost venture to say, arrest warrants ready to be issued.
Well, I don't know about that, but I agree with you. I've observed a lot of questionable conduct that raises questions about a lot of people's activities around the family, and I don't agree with your theories that family members have participated. I also don't agree with your theory that, you know, it was one of those, the mother was going to take the child and I'm going to murder her instead the rest of them. And I'll tell you what, I don't agree with you, because if that's true, she is probably the ultimate villain, which is why she won't testify, because the more chance of that being true is the less chance of her testifying. And one of the things that Jan brought up, or that Jan and I have discussed at different times, is the fact that if they're not careful, basically what they're going to do is ensure the death penalty here. And
these are not my thoughts on the deal. These are what I have firsthand knowledge of. This is not, you know, I was sitting in a dark room one night with the light barely glowing, and I come up with all these crazy-ass ideas that I once in a while give you little pieces, and you have to kind of fill it in a little bit. Because I would have said something totally different. But no, this is the demeanor of this family, and you really don't know how. I would say that, you know, they weren't involved in the murder, but they've been involved in the cover-up in as much as they...
I don't disagree with you. It was the murder aspect of it that I disagreed with. But do families get involved with cover-up when their children involved with crimes? Jesus, the sun rises in the morning. And in all fairness to families, you know, and Jan, you can speak to this, mothers go crazy when things happen with their children, and for many of them it warps their judgments. To have a mother get up and say, my child has committed a crime, it is wrong, and I'm going to report them to the police, or whatever words you want to use, is so unheard of in our society that I'm shocked whenever a mother is strong enough to get up and put society's interests over her child. Now, wouldn't you find it hard
normally, yeah, but, I mean, you got to realize this is not just her child that we have that she's having to protect. She's making a choice between a child and a grandchild. Who do you go for? And that's what everybody has faulted this woman for. I mean, nobody in that family has stood up for Kaylee. I don't know how to put it in words right now, because
I understand and I agree with you, but the point is that when people are twisted and turned in life, you never really know what they're going to do, and more than likely they're going to do the wrong thing. And if assuming everything that all of you say is true, then she did the wrong thing, and that's pretty much what I expect from mothers.
Well,
under pressure, sadly.
Even like the time when she gave the hairbrush, when they requested Kaylee's hairbrush, she gave them the wrong brush and admitted she gave them the wrong brush. She knew exactly what she was doing when she did that.
She cannot contribute to her child's demise no matter what she's done. I don't agree with her, but I understand that emotion as a woman, that some women cannot do that. They cannot do the right thing under that level of pressure, because they're just not programmed to do that. So for her, the dilemma is so intense that she just is functioning very poorly. I'm not trying to justify her conduct, nor do I agree with it. I'm just saying it's a phenomenon that I've observed for years and years about what mothers do under pressure.
I can help you, Manny. Casey, Kaylee was the new Casey, all right? When Kaylee was born, Casey, basically, for all intents and purposes, was not any longer close to the family. The new little baby was it, and all the attention was focused on her.
Yes,
Cindy
was jealous
over Kaylee that it was kind of weird at times, according to, you know, things that we know. And nobody could touch that little granddaughter. And when she thought for a moment, because she was in the dark early on, she kind of hoped that her daughter was telling the truth, that the child was still alive. That's why she was calling law enforcement, and I want her arrested, and yada, yada, yada. The minute that she absolutely, for a fact, in her heart and in her mind, settled the fact that this child is dead, then Casey came back into the picture now as the child, the way she had started out originally. So all her love and missions and admirations and everything else went from the dead Kaylee and now into Casey, who is demon-possessed from hell. But that's where it all shifted. That's why she started to try to put her finger on the scale and help her daughter out, because she already realized, shit, granddaughter's gone. So all that love that she had lost for her daughter when Kaylee was born now is reverting now back over. But Casey's not buying it. She's not buying into it. She loathes her mother because they turned her back. And she kept saying that her dad now is coming back around and everything. But when this child was born, Cindy wanted to adopt it, and it was always a big rub because this child got all the attention and everything else that Casey normally got, being the only little girl there. So when you put all that in perspective and see how that, and I'm not a psychologist, but shit, it's easy for me to figure out, and that's why now she's turning it, but Casey doesn't want to play ball. She's like, nah, fuck that shit. I know what y'all did to me, and that's why I believe that she killed the child just to keep Cindy from getting it because of the hatred that happened when it was born. Now, I think when Richard Grun takes the stand, you're going to hear it again, and you're going to say, whoa, that's what Cobra said. That's exactly right.
But, you know, Cobra, with all due respect, that's psychology 101 and happens in every single family. Nothing new about it, but people don't kill every day over it, and I don't disagree with any of what you're saying. But what happened here is classic. When she got down to only one child left, she started protecting the one child left. And
yeah,
that's what happens with parents and mothers, especially ones that delude themselves and
right,
are just, you know, basically under the opiate of childhood. You know, frankly, I never liked my children that much, so I find it hard to understand. But, you know, most parents do. I mean, no, really, I mean, you look at your children, they're in it for themselves, so at what point do you start considering murder as some avenue to deal with your children, other than murdering them yourself? So, and, you know, if the mother were on trial for murdering the kids, then maybe I'd have a different view. But at the same time, what you're saying to me is why I have a feeling that there will be more going on after the trial, because you have a situation where that is a defense for the mother's actions in terms of mitigating the degree of her criminal conduct. And the more I listen to it, the more I agree with you. I smell criminal conduct in the family in terms of, you know, meddling the evidence and all the rest of this. The same way, like you, I believe there's potentially a scheme to change the testimony by family members saying things that aren't true. So with that thought in mind, what we have here is a typical dysfunctional family, which, by the way, seems to be a trademark in America lately. It's harder to find a functional family than it is a dysfunctional family. So that's basically what we have going on here. And yes, I
this textbook off the charts, oh, Manny. This one, Manny, is way, way out there, buddy. Way out there.
Well, most dysfunctional families, I deal with a lot of them, and the only thing they haven't done is commit murder, but there's a fine line between them committing murder and not committing murder. So it's just a problem in the United States. The poor quality of child rearing is showing up across a wide spectrum of our country in so many ways, it's absolutely frightening.
Mm-hmm.
So if America
okay.
wants to deal with a topic, it's poor parenthood.
I'm going to bring Danny.
Simon, were you still
Danny,
with us?
You are the thinker, the man that I rely on. You, like I, am older than dirt.
Oh my God.
I looked at what was going on, and I saw a family dynamic that I hated, that the grandparents had lost the grandchild, and now they are faced with the possibility of losing the child. It's not one death, it's two deaths. I mean, how would you react? I mean, are these people doing anything other than just norming, you know, reacting as a regular person?
Well, I think as Cobra said a few seconds ago that Cindy, long before the remains were found, was convinced in her mind and in her heart that Kaylee was dead. And that's when Cindy or Casey came back into the picture. She had been displaced by Kaylee. What we saw of Cindy on the witness stand and the breakdowns and all that probably was legitimate. I don't say she was faking that. But I think she's got a lot of explaining to do. And, I felt bad for her the day on the witness stand. I guess everybody did. But I think there's a lot more to Cindy than what we saw on the witness stand. I think there was involvement here, and I guess that's what the Manny and Cobra both think, too, that after the dust settles, Cindy and probably some others are going to have to answer a few questions. And
I just wanted to jump in on this one because I did talk to an attorney in Orlando, and he said that you know how much it costs for the state to press charges against someone? How many times is there a case where somebody, does something minor, but it's a crime, and the police are frustrated because the state chooses not to prosecute? But I think it comes down to monetary logistics. How much is it going to cost the state? And I think that in the end, with George and Cindy, because of what they've undergone throughout this whole ordeal, yeah, they lied. But they're working with the state now, and I think that they made some kind of an agreement that I don't think it was just a deal, but I think they said, look, here's the deal. We're going to show you evidence that you have no idea existed, okay? We're going to be able to prove our case, and here's the deal. Your daughter killed your grandchild, and that's all there is to it. Now, you either work with us or we're not going to be on your side in the future. And I think once they saw the goods, they realized that there was no choice. They had to go with the state. That's my opinion, of course.
Oh, okay. We've eaten up the better part of an hour ragging on the prosecution. Let's talk defense. Thursday, we saw the defense team get their first chance at the ball, and I was, wondering where in the mess they could possibly start out at. In fact, I talked to Jan the day before, and I said, you know what? They got to put on this great presentation, but there's no opening point. Yeah, there's no sensible point. Dave, were you going through the same machinations I was?
Well, I'll tell you, you got somebody like Chaney Mason with years of experience of being a legend in his own mind, okay? Then you've got Dorothy Sands. You've got Ann Fennell. You've got these attorneys there to advise Baez, but he sits there and his best packages are being ripped to shreds by the prosecution. In the end, I mean, Huntington did a good job, but I think the end result was that whether he knew it or not, he ended up agreeing with Baez on the the body was somewhere else. You know, so bingo, he agreed with the state. So he with Ashton. So I think that Ashton went a little bit above board. He was argumentative, and that might be a problem with the jury in some instances. But I think that he still came across as Ashton is one of the best prosecutors in the country, and I think he did an excellent job. But look what he did yesterday with Spitz. You just can't beat a guy like him, and I don't see the defense rebounding from this.
Oh, I mean, yesterday was priceless.
Ashton at his best, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was systematic, and it was a complete teardown. And I'm sure Jeff Ashton is, actually a very nice guy. And,
yeah.
You know, he wasn't setting out to, destroy a man's career. But, it was systematic. I mean, it was brutal.
You said yesterday, Simon? Yesterday?
Yeah.
You must have watched the wrong. You must have watched the wrong part of the trial that I saw. Oh God! I heard that he tried to. I think what Baez has done is put his weak guys up first, and that's what you do. You throw your pawns out there. That young buck that was a PhD, he kind of shut him down a little bit. But then they had the old guy on there yesterday, and he was for more kicking their ass. And he was not going to let Ashton put words in his mouth or say certain things. And his closing was that the coroner who did this work failed at the very basics of doing their work simply because they did not cut open the skull and extract whatever brain matter was in there and analyze it properly. And I think that that old boy wasn't going to be led by no horse hoop around the stall with Ashton, and Ashton continued to try to get him, but I think from what I saw, I must have been watching some other channel, but it seemed to me that the defense struck right in the heart because the hair was matted on the mantle of the skull, not on the top. Was it blown to the side? And were these photographs taken to poise it in such a way of and they show this guy, that was a stupid thing from Ashton's view, he gave this guy a different photograph to look at than what he had produced. So I take the contrary to it. I think that finally I saw Baez gaining a little traction on this thing yesterday, and I could be wrong.
Okay. Dave, I would love your comments on that. I just viewed yesterday as a brutal destruction.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I had a chance to meet Dr. Spitz during the break, and I went out and shook his hand. I said, it's a real honor and a pleasure to meet you. I mean, the guy had an illustrious career, but I think better days are behind him. I think that Ashton really decimated him. I mean, he made him get angry. You know, the guy got angry with him, with Ashton. Ashton this time held his composure. You know, and I think he did that out of deference, out of respect for the doctor because of his career. But I think that in the end, I talked to Anthony Kolarowski again for Sentinel, and we both agreed that, you know, the day before with Huntington, he was a little bit rough. But and that, like we both agreed, could work against the prosecution for the jury. But yesterday was definitely Ashton at his best. He didn't lose his cool. He didn't hammer his hand down. He didn't shake his head. You know, he just went after this guy and proved him wrong.
Nah, I disagree, Dave. He was on the back of his heels wheeling, you know, when somebody gets knocked backwards, he was on the back of his heels trying not to fall over backwards with this guy. And I think, since we don't know who's up next, but I would not be surprised if he doesn't use that as a lead way for Crump to come in, because now the guy says, was the picture, was this crime scene manipulated? He says, well, the word manipulated comes from the word hand, and somebody put their hands on it. So when he left off on that, I say, Crump, you're up first and foremost Monday morning, 9 o'clock. Let's go.
Well, you know, I think they're going to go through their forensic people first. They're not going to bring up Crump first thing. First thing, for sure, the judge is going to bring William Rodriguez back, you know, the co-founder of the Bodies Farm. And so he's already dictated what's going to happen on this one. And I still don't think that Crump or anyone, that's towards the tail end when he wants to now bring in the prize, like you had said earlier. But I do not believe that the defense doesn't come in there with people they can just step all over. Dr. Spitz is not someone that you bring in for the state to just crap all over. You know, the defense brought him in for a purpose. And the same thing with that PhD Huntington. You know, and that's the thing, that you just don't waste those guys, because every time you drop one, you're losing a part of your case.
Okay, I have to admit that I just viewed the testimony by Dr. Spitz, you know, as brutal. I mean, I thought it was very unfortunate. You know, a man with his reputation didn't need to be torn to shreds by Jeff Ashton. But, I mean, Ashton just did a splendid job. Denny, did you by chance watch that part?
I watched or I listened to most of it. Unfortunately, so somebody came to the door right near the end, but I on the recaps, if I picked it up right, the apparently Dr. Spitz indicated that he thought there was some type of conspiracy going, and not only that it was a shoddy autopsy, then somebody maybe from the ME's office repositioned some hair or something when the picture was taken and posted up, and I'm just wondering. What the locals, now Dr. G is kind of a local hero, I think, in Florida. He's got her television show and all that. And I'm just wondering, and the people on the jury are Floridians, I'm wondering what they think of when their prize medical examiner is attacked for being basically incompetent, and then her, or at least her employees, being crooked and tampering with evidence and stuff. I don't know how well that might sit with the locals sitting on that jury, whether it went over well or not. I was if that's what in fact Dr. Spitz did, be curious to see how the jurors accepted that.
Manny, I have to ask you. I mean,
You must have heard me chuckling in the background.
Right.
Go ahead, Simon.
I watched it. I laughed. I mean, this was systematic destruction of a witness, and it was splendidly done. I'm curious to get your comments.
Well, first of all, I'll coattail one remark. For anyone who testifies on behalf of the prosecution, who's an employee in the area of which people live, has an advantage that cannot be equaled. If anyone thinks that that someone's going to believe a defense expert before they believe a prosecution expert, they have another thought coming. It just doesn't work that way. It's very frustrating, but that's exactly what happened. So here you have a case of, no matter what he says, the tendency is to lean towards the prosecution. And feeling sorry for him, how much was he paid? I mean, for goodness sake, he's the one who decided to be up there And if that, if you decide to be up there, the old story is you can't stand the heat, don't get in the kitchen. Nobody forced him to testify. Personally, I thought he had a losing situation. Sometimes experts decide to testify in a case and find there's little or nothing they can do, but they feel obligated since they've collected the money to testify, and it starts to become an issue with them about what they should do and not do, and then they worry about, gee, if I walk away from the case, it'll make her look like she's guilty, so then they get into that experience. So a lot of events occur that, in here that influence why an expert testifies, but if you're going to be a witness for the defense in a case like this, you know what's going to happen. You're going to get attacked. So for anyone to feel sorry for this witness because it didn't go well for him, should ask themselves, how much was he paid and why was he testifying in the first place? So does that answer your question?
I think he did a good damn job, Dale. Dadgummit. I'm sorry to be outnumbered by everybody, but I think he did a good job. Hey, can I ask Denny a quick question I wanted to ask him last week? Can I ask Denny a question?
Sure.
Denny, you dealing with the mob all the time and former this and them guys, and I know you know a lot of bad guys and probably some good old bad guys or bad good guys or however you want to, you know, they ain't never, I don't got, anyway, my question is this. What if a person trying to sound like Billy Badass goes around town telling folks that he's a made man and he's not a made man? Does that piss anybody off in the mob? Mm-hmm.
It can, yes.
Okay.
I'm going to stop this before it starts. I know exactly. I know exactly where COVID's coming from.
Yeah.
It's not part of the program, Mr. C.
Just wanted to make sure.
Are you saying that Cobra has trouble with self-restraint? Are you saying that?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to make sure the peanut gallery was listening and let them know I'm always thinking.
Well, throw some peanuts and we'll pay more attention.
I do have a question. I don't remember. I think it was Manny that said it. Who said that the witnesses that's being called in aren't to talk to anybody about what they're testimony is that what you said?
Oh, that's correct. If you start, first of all, you can be severely embarrassed by the opposition. So the last thing you want to do is give them ammunition. And usually the witnesses are admonished by the judge not to speak, and the prosecution admonishes potential witnesses that to do so, could they could find themselves in contempt of court, depending on what the local rules are. So.
Okay.
It's just not a good scenario to start talking too much.
Manny,
is that
I have a question for
the defense?
It goes for everybody.
Okay, but the reason I'm asking this is because Dr. Spitz did an interview on a TV station from out of Detroit about his testimony about this case about a week before, about a week ago.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Huh?
It's crazy and stupid.
Well, okay, I just wanted to make sure that I had heard you right.
Oh, yeah,
so, okay.
I don't know. Again, I said I don't know what the local rules are or how the judge approached it or what significance he played on it, but I can tell you, in my local jurisdiction, especially with the kind of cases we get in Los Angeles and they're high profile with celebrities, you start talking as a witness and you're liable to find yourself fined or put into contempt of court.
Manny, I have a question for you, too. Good question. I've asked several of the attorneys that cover for In Session, whatever, you know, all the different programs, and I'm getting mixed results. I haven't gotten a real solid answer from anyone about the jury. Is the jury instructed at all to not react to things?
No.
And there's a reason why I'm asking you this.
Well,
because, no, go ahead.
Usually what happens is, and by the way, the instructions are done in front of you, so if you didn't hear any instructions, there really weren't any instructions. But generally speaking, juries are admonished. They have a whole list of things that they read them before they ever take the stand. And one of them, of course, is, you know, not to tell where anybody what your position is. Don't tip your hand.
Yeah, he knows all that. Yeah.
So, yes, there's sort of a generic thing that's done to them. Most of them realize they're being watched, so they play their cards pretty close to the vest. So there's some, the accumulation of all of it is, yes. But in terms of, does someone stand up and say, you need to watch this case with a straight face because other people might be watching you? The answer is no.
Right, because I've seen reports. I mean, people have reported to me that so-and-so said this on a website, and also that there's tweeting going on, which I do see that. But a lot of times I see these tweets that it's like, oh, juror number whatever rolled her eyes or some kind of a reaction that I'm just not seeing when I look at that jury. And I wonder if it has something to do with sound with news bites. In other words, you sensationalize a little bit because you get a little bit more of a story out of it.
Well, that's always true. But then again, you got these people like Chief Cobra who go, no, I saw something completely different and whatever.
That's right,
so,
yeah.
In their mind, that's what they saw. And I'm just, Cobra, believe me, I'm not belittling you or criticizing. I'm just saying that, like everything else in the world, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And sometimes in a poker game, someone will say, did you see him flinch? And you go, excuse me? Oh, I saw him flinch, so I knew he was bluffing. And
well,
everyone at the table goes, I didn't see anything. So,
right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
and not just that, but you'll have these, I mean, you get these journalists that sit down there tweeting, and you've got people like Peter, let's say, you know, Dr. Glass or whatever, that are basically trained, you know, to read people. But these people are just regular journalists that sit there and read into something. And I don't think that's really a fair way to assess the jury. And I've also read, people have sent me emails and stuff about people who are writing about the case, the trial, and they're not even in the courtroom, but they're writing like they are in the courtroom. And there was one who sat next to me. No.
Well, let me make a comment. That is a time-honored tradition of bad media that's gone on forever. Anyone who is interested, they should research what's called the Times bombing trials in the early 1900s, where the L.A. Times was bombed by anarchists and defended by Clarence Darrow. And the L.A. Times, who had a vested interest in the case since their employees were once killed, just ran this yellow journalism to a level that it had never seen before. So situations dictate different things that happen, and very clearly this is some of the things that happen. And, in fact, there's a couple of well-made movies, one by Billy Wilder, wrote a script in 51 with Kirk Douglas about how a guy decided to use a mine collapse to advance his career. So this is going to go on with journalism as long as people are fighting for ratings. It's
well,
just,
the thing
okay.
that bothers me.
I'm not fighting for ratings, but
oh,
do like to keep my callers happy. We have someone calling in from the 208 area code. Well, what's your name and what's your question for us?
Hey, Simon, it's Peggy again. It's the common sense from Idaho. You need to tell Cobra. Oh, I love that you were talking about that testimony with Dr. Spitzen. Oh, my God. I was loving it because he so got torn apart. He couldn't remember any reports that he read. He couldn't remember having any television interviews. It was great. I had great fun watching that. I figured Jan was probably cheering it on, too. But Ashton, I thought, totally tore Dr. Spitz apart. And so it's odd to me to hear a different take on that. So I don't know. I watched the whole interview, but I thought it was fabulous.
Cobra, I think you just got an arrow in your back.
You know, if we all wore black pants, we'd all look like bad boys.
Got to get off the Kool-Aid, Cobra.
Coke, Kool-Aid, first time I met him, and I tell you, I did change. I went from red to green, but, you know, it's still bug juice, no matter how you look at it.
I love your program, Simon. I just wanted to make that comment, and I really love Manny's input on it. He speaks so that we can all understand what the all the legalese are in the courtroom, so I really appreciate you having him in there also.
Well, thank you,
my goodness.
You've given him a huge head.
You know, he'll be hell to deal with for weeks.
I'm sorry, Simon,
because I love you and Jan also. You bring a lot to this program, and I really appreciate it.
Are you going to be far now?
You're paying me a lot of money to disagree with everything else they say, so I'm getting paid to disagree.
Okay. That's okay then, Cobra. We love you too. Has to be all sides represented, right?
Give me the damn check, Simon. Give me my 2 cents and 49 sevenths.
Anyway, I really look forward to Sunday afternoons with you guys. You do a fabulous job and really do represent all sides of it. So I really appreciate it, Simon. I'm going to continue listening.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah, Manny. See, Manny, I told you, somebody's got to represent the other damn side. Jesus.
Oh, life's a bitch and then Cobra.
Hell yeah. Not the way I heard it, but anyway.
Okay. I'm going to move on here.
That penalty section of this damn thing. Boy, we're really going to be. Do you give her more juice? Hell yeah. Don't give her the first one that makes her drunk and goes pass out. Just put number three in there first. That's what I'll be saying.
Okay. Let's talk about the bug guy. It seemed to me that he was sent away with a bug in his ear. Was it Huntington? Dave, you watched the story unfold.
Yeah, well, I'm getting here that in my notes here, you had said something on your blog. Was that William Rodriguez?
Oh, uh-huh. William Rodriguez.
Well,
yep.
He was really a forensic anthropologist who was co-founder of the Body Farm. So he does do stuff in entomology, but he's mostly, I think, known for taphonomy and anthropology. So there he was, and he was accepted as an expert witness. But in the end, Baez took him into a direction that was never disclosed to the state. So the judge ended up reprimanding Baez, taking the jury out to do this really publicly. And I think he's going to nail him with contempt of court when the trial's over. That's what he threatened to do. And some of the attorneys there said afterward that, well, judges normally forget that sort of thing because once the trial's over, they're done with it. But I don't think this judge forgets anything. So is that the man you're talking about?
Yes, indeed. It was delightful to watch. And unfortunately, the jury didn't witness it, but basically, Judge Perry brought out a big stick and just waved it around. You know, someone's going to get beaten with this big stick.
Yeah, but isn't this the same guy that told the judge that he was not told to have to include everything in his report? Is this the same guy? And then he turned around. He told Judge Perry that twice. And then he turned around when Baez put the words in his mouth. He didn't ask him what they told him or whatever. He told him, didn't I say blah, blah, blah? And he said, yes, you did. So that, I mean, he contradicted his own self when he talked to the judge.
Oh, I just see a beating coming down the pipe.
I mean, he told Judge Perry twice no, and then he turned around and told Baez yes.
Dave.
Yeah, well,
Dave.
You know, No, that's all right. No, I mean, I know that, the judge was very careful about the words he selected, and he said he's going to give he's not going to take anything away from Casey because of a screw-up that Baez
right.
made. So he's going to allow this, but he made these depositions work on Saturday. Boom. And you know, so that this guy can come in and testify again on Monday. Now, they also had a deposition to do of the guilt expert or whatever. What do you call that woman? Grief expert. So I don't know. I think the defense, I think they were very busy this weekend, and we'll see what happens on Monday. But as far as I know, that guy's going to take the stand and probably be allowed to testify about.
Yeah, well, they told Jeff Ashton was supposed to do a deposition with him yesterday afternoon and after court. And then he said they were bringing him back Monday morning.
Yeah, well. Well, you know, this is going to be interesting because this guy's going to testify about the duct tape, you know. And I think that the jury's going to get a little bit of information out of Spitz. They're going to get a little bit of information out of Huntington. And they're going to get a little information out of this guy. So it's up to the jury, really, I mean, to figure out which one they want to believe. Or is there an element of doubt in the jury's mind, you know. I don't know. Will it create one? That's something maybe Manny knows more about for sure.
Actually, I'm going to zip out to the phone lines. We have someone from the 803 area code. Caller from 803. What's your name and what's your question for us?
This is Donna from South Carolina. And I cannot believe that anybody thought that Spitz came off with any degree of credibility. I mean, Ashton ate his lunch. He got the doctor to admit that he thought that somebody came and picked up the skull in one hand and picked up the mandible in another hand and put it back together and then put the duct tape on.
Simon, I told you they weren't going to buy that damn story. I told you, damn it.
I mean, it was laughable. He came across as a nutty professor. He came across as everybody's grouchy old great-great-great-great-grandfather. I mean...
I have to admit that I got a huge giggle out of Ashton ate his lunch comment.
I can't think of a better description. Until then, it was strictly a no-doze time. I mean, it was, you know, this is the type of stuff that puts juries to sleep. And that's the mistake to me that you make with the defense, because I thought it improved the prosecution's case.
He is so past his sell-by date. I mean, the gentleman might have been a legend at one time. It's time for him to not do this anymore. I mean, he's impacting somebody's life.
Well, maybe someone stuffed him in the trunk of Casey's car for a while.
Well, maybe he's guilty of needing a paycheck. And quite frequently, I see experts do it. They can't turn down the money. And once they're in the case, then they're very sorry because there's no way they can justify their testimony, and they end up making fools out of themselves. And I just thought the guy made a complete ass out of himself. He didn't belong there.
Somebody just said in the chat room, to top that off, Spitz was the one that broke the skull, the whatever it was he had broke on it, and tried to say he didn't realize he had done that.
And the classic scene was when he took the bag of trash up to the bug doctor and started taking them out piece by piece and saying, you see anything in here? You see anything in here? Okay, here you look. Okay, you know, here's the salami. Oh, it's not food. It's a piece of paper, isn't it? Do you see any food in here? I mean, it was wonderful. It was just really good lawyering.
Young lady, I think that what you're saying is the type of things the jurors see. And sometimes everybody in this panel, including myself, has to remind themselves that we are not looking at this case. Average people who get up every day and lead their lives differently are the ones that make decisions in these cases. And incidentally, that's the reason I disagree with Cobra sometimes, because he does have inside information, but the jury doesn't. So at the end of the day, they make decisions based upon things they only see in court, which incidentally was why the prosecution lost the O.J. Simpson case. Everyone tried O.J. Simpson on the information they heard in the press instead of only the information the jury heard. And that's always a danger.
You know what I like about all this, Manny? Here's what I like about all of it. I'm one crazy feller. Let's see, there's a panel here of four, five, six, counting Jan. All right, that's half a jury. There's people on that jury. Bet your sweet ass there's probably a couple of them on that jury that think just like I do.
Nobody thinks like you do, Cobra. Nobody.
Oh, yeah, I was trying to join that one, too. No, Cobra, you're being delusional right now.
I do have a question I'd like to ask Cobra.
Oh.
Do you think if George and Cindy Anthony stood up and said, we made a huge mistake in judgment and we would like to sincerely apologize to the Grun family, do you think that the Grun family would be willing to drop it? Because I think they would.
No, absolutely not. She has went way beyond. I mean, let me ask you a question. I don't know you except that you, I'm from Virginia originally and you're from South Carolina, and I like all everybody down south there, so we cousins.
It isn't going to help you at all, Cobra. Stick with the truth now.
All right, I'm going to tell you, if I tried to frame your daughter or your son for murdering somebody that I already know that my daughter did it, and I tried to frame, now how in the hell am I going to come to you and say, ma'am, from South Carolina? It was a bit all big mistake. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, everybody talks about Jesse Grund and everybody talks about Richard Grund. If I was Mrs. Grund, the mother of that boy, I would have Cindy Anthony out on the front lawn swinging her like a lariat. I mean, I would get physical. I would kick her ass.
What kind of lady?
Then when you open up the National Enquirer magazine and you read in there that your husband has sacrificed this kid to some kind of sacrificial god or something or another, I mean, I still got the copy of it with her raising her right hand and they put my client out there making him look like he was some kind of evil preacher. How do you call somebody up or sit down to break bread with them and say, you know, I'm sorry for all this? I don't know that you can ever say you're sorry for that kind of behavior.
Now, I have always thought about Mrs. Grund having to sit back and watch them try. I mean, let's be honest. They tried to set up her son for the murder of a baby.
Okay,
folks, stop arguing.
Why? It's the best part of the show.
We have a limited time frame, and I want to go back to a question that Denny asked me. Denny, juror number four. Is that like some TV movie?
Yeah. I think Dave mentioned a little bit ago that some of the news people send these tweets out from the courtroom, and I've heard a couple of them on the shows, mainly on the headline news channel program in the evening, when they're recapping, talk about juror number four. A couple of them say that juror four allegedly said that she is very uncomfortable judging anyone, and supposedly, according to these observations from these people, is that she pays virtually no attention when the prosecution is asking the questions, but as soon as Baez or the defense takes over, her notebook opens up and she's, you know, all ears and eyes. And I'm just, and according to them, just because of this juror number four, there's virtually a guarantee of a hung jury. I've obviously never seen juror number four. I don't know. I was wondering if Dave, being in the courtroom, thinks that the prosecution is basically dead because of juror number four.
Yeah, I've seen juror number four. Actually, I've seen 17 of them. So, but juror number four is... I've seen all of them taking notes. I've seen all of them not taking notes. And juror number four was probably focused more on, because she was the one that Judge Perry wanted as a juror that the state didn't want on the jury. Because she was against the death penalty, she didn't have, you know, she didn't think it was her right, it was God's right to judge, not hers, which is true. But the judge was very, he wanted her on that panel, and he got her. But I think that you can't really look into a person, once again, that when they take a note or when they don't take a note, what is that telling you? I don't think that necessarily tells you anything. That juror might be sitting there agreeing with the state all along and doesn't need to take notes, and then wants to take notes when the defense is speaking and argue, in her head with retain that information. Now, it might be the other way, but I don't think that you can really go by... You can't judge a book by its cover, in other words.
I don't want to... It's my take. I don't want to ruin this, but I remember a story when I was a young lawyer, and after one of my early jury trials, I asked a juror about why she was taking so many notes at the end of some testimony after the witness left the stand, and the lady turned to me with a straight face and said to me, I was writing down a grocery list of things that I had to do to go home. The testimony was, basically very boring. So you have no idea what they're writing down.
No, that's true. That's funny.
It wasn't funny at the time.
No.
Hey, Simon, can I... I'm going to have to run here in a minute. Can I ask Manny a question that I really would like an answer to before we run out of time? Manny, the so-called surprise witness that Baez added to the witness list last week, who was this convicted kidnapper and so on and so forth, who supposedly had made phone calls back and forth with George Anthony.
Yeah, the guy who stood on the courthouse steps that he never spoke to him, that one?
Yes. Yes. Well, anyway, when they were discussing that, which, based on the latest information, supposedly was a dud. This guy didn't have that phone number until 2009. But anyway, there was some talk back and forth about whether Baez had gone over the line by not researching to determine if this guy, in fact, was the owner of that phone number during the time in question. And one of the panelists on the show said, well, we can think it might be poor research on his part or whatever, but a lawyer has full immunity and can do whatever they want without fear of being sued or anything. And I'm just wondering, is that completely accurate? In other words, could Baez grab your name or my name out of the phone book and throw it out there just as a distraction of some kind? Are there any
limits? Well, that law is slightly different in different states, but basically it's called the litigation privilege, and a few states, including California, have exceptions, and that is usually bad faith. If it turns out to be a guy who was once in love with his wife who he never liked, then I think he's got some serious trouble. So it really depends on whether he has some motive that's an improper purpose, but 99% of the time that statement is exactly accurate. And, of course, the reason is that nobody wants to in any way quash any potential effort by someone in a defense case. So the answer to the question is yes, but it happened that guys rarely ever abuse that. I mean, usually when this happens, it's because somebody just screwed up and they were in a rush. They thought they found a little nugget and they should be embarrassed. And these are the things lawyers never forget. If what happened is what I thought happened, then I can assure you Baez is saying to himself, what a fool I was. I wish I would have skipped that one. And that, it happens to everybody.
Okay. Thank you.
Denny, you have to run, I know. So I want to thank you for taking part with us this afternoon.
It was a Real pleasure, Simon. Again, happy Father's Day to everyone, and hopefully we'll be talking again next week. Have a great
happy
day, everybody.
Happy Father's Day to you too, Denny.
Always a pleasure, Denny.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll look forward to it.
Okay. I like to throw gasoline on the fire. So I'm going to move back to the body farm guy. Can't remember his name, but there was this huge statement that he made. He got a call by Linda Kenny Barden on December the 11th. You know, Byers cut him off from answering the question.
Whenever he asked what she said, what she said to him.
But there's just a little problem with this scenario. The remains were found on the 11th. However, they were not identified as being Kaylee Marie Anthony until the 19th.
Doesn't matter. Anyway.
He said it was the 11th. He said it was the 11th when he got the phone call.
Yeah.
And, well, it's interesting because I thought that was funny, too. But I talked to Tony Pipitone about that. And he said, now, I remember going back to that date. When I came home and it was all over the news that a body had been found right around the corner. And you knew right away that it had to have been Kaylee. I mean, there's no other person except for Trenton Duckett who was missing. And the police immediately came out and said that, no, the bones were not old enough to be, you know, someone. I don't mean the bones of a child a certain age. I mean, in the woods, you know, dead for as many years as Trenton Duckett might have been when this body was found. So you knew right then and there that it was the body of Kaylee, okay? And then at the time, one of the first things, this is what Pipitone told me, was that the defense, you know, they're going to do things right away. They're not going to wait for things to fall into their lap. And he said that the state is going to go out and gobble up the best expert witnesses they possibly can. So at the same time, the defense has to go out there and grab people before they're no longer available. Now, does that make sense, Manny?
Absolutely. O.J. Simpson is a classic example of that. What separates O.J. Simpson's case from others is he had the opportunity to hire some of the top criminologists while the body was still warm. I mean, in this case, the body was discovered several months later. In the case of Simpson, they had it immediately. So one of the rare times the prosecution had to contend with current evidence from a defense group, and that was one of the weaknesses. I always laughed about it because I said, rarely does a defendant be able to get this kind of fresh material to work with. Usually they don't see anything until it's too late to have any productive testimony. So, yes, it's a major difference.
But he said he flew into Orlando on the 13th. Why so early?
Well, frequently, if they have some, exactly what was just said is true. First of all, when I see some of this, I ask myself, what do they know about this case that we don't know? And what the only thing they could know is that she was guilty, and sooner or later this body was going to be discovered, and they were going to have to be prepared for that eventuality. So sometimes I ascribe it to a kind of a pseudo-admission of guilt, and maybe that's inappropriate for me, but I do. It's just human nature.
Okay, I had my question out and flew it out of my head.
Sorry,
go ahead. It's okay. I forgot what it was I was going to say.
I'm just personally kind of amazed that he would mention December the 11th. It doesn't make any sense. I mean, Wasn't the defense game all along that, you know, she'd been kidnapped?
Well, that's what they had went by.
She was still alive.
Yeah,
okay, Jan has collected her thoughts.
I did. when they first found Kaylee, the remains, didn't they rope it off and not even the defense team in there to while they were searching for all the parts and stuff? Didn't they rope it off and the defense was trying to get in there, but they weren't allowed in there?
Correct.
Okay, so why would they bring a man in from Nebraska or wherever he was so early for him to just sit there and wait before he could do any examining of anything? Why would they bring him in so early before they even was sure that it was even her body?
Dave.
Well, I think they were sure.
Yeah, well, we know that, but I'm talking about in reality, they're not supposed to have known. So, and whenever
Jan, when this happened, didn't you think it was the body? Did you believe that it could be anyone else?
What I'm trying to say is, the fact is, they were trying to tell everybody, I mean, the grandparents was in a fine hotel that night, acting like it was no big deal. They were having a big party, steak dinner, celebrating, so to speak, laughing and joking around the day that they claimed that this baby's body was found, but they were trying to say that it was not Kaylee. Okay, I mean, that's what everybody was saying. Oh, no, it can't be. So they over here partying over other things. I mean, the defense was, I mean, the Baez was involved in that dinner. Okay,
so. Don't you think the defense? No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, what I'm just saying is, if they were so wanted everybody to think so much that they did not believe that this was Kaylee, why would they bring this man in so early before it was even identified for sure that it was Kaylee?
Well, I think that they're playing, both sides of the fence. If you're gonna have a good defense team, they're gonna look at every possibility. They're gonna look at a kidnapping. They're gonna look at an accidental death. They're gonna look at a murder. They're gonna look at every angle on this, and try and put their ducks in a row so that as the whole story unfolds, as evidence is put out in the public's eyes and ears for inspection, then the defense can go from there. That's all discovery stuff, you know. But the defense gets to look at it, but they don't know which tack to take until they see the evidence come their way. So, of course, they're going to get, you know, their specialists, their professional people involved in it.
Yeah, I can understand that, but why so early?
Because
when they knew they weren't going to be allowed in there.
The sooner the better.
Chan's point's very well taken. Yes, the sooner the better. But it may raise questions about what they knew and when they knew it, you know, and everything else that goes with it.
It raises questions, but that doesn't mean that's absolutely true.
No, the problem is it's not testimony, and it's not fact, and it's not admissible to prove anything in the case. So we're really just exercising some opinion and gum service to something the jury's never going to hear. And in the end, that's the problem with a lot of these cases, is too much of the trial goes on outside of the courtroom and not enough inside.
Okay. Let's run out to the switchboard again. We have someone from the 318 area code. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Hi, I'm Net Detective. I just have I did a little research on this identification of skeletal remains. And I found a website that has forensic pathology where a guy wrote the procedures, and I know that was questionable with Dr. Spitz. He said, you know, the skull cap had to be taken off. In this, it never mentions that. when you're doing an analysis of a skeletal remains. It, everything that it outlines in this, Dr. G did, lining out the body, take a full picture and everything, and I just wonder where Dr. Spitz got that, because the pieces are so, you can see all of them so much, wonder why you would destroy more evidence because you're able to see every nook and cranny, and she did everything that, according to this, she was supposed to do.
Yeah, I agree with you, and that's what Jeff Ashton was trying to get him to show him, where is it that it says they have to do that, but he never could give him an answer. In other words, he just left it up in the air, so to speak. So I agree with you, though, because I was questioning the same thing.
And I read her autopsy report again today that it said the same thing, that she washed, you know, and the things that she sent off for testing was that fluid that she washed the skull. She washed the skull out and sent that fluid for testing. So she was covered, in my opinion.
I don't think there's any doubt that she was covered. I think Dr. Spitz opened a door, and Jeff Ashton crushed him like a bug.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of bugs, this is Pipkin. And speaking of bugs, Dr. Huntington, he was recommended, you know, by Dr. Neil Haskell. The defense team contacted Dr. Haskell first. He was already taken. And he recommended Dr. Huntington. Isn't that amusing?
No, that's common. And sometimes you race to get the best possible guy and to freeze the other side out. Even in civil litigation, I know guys that go to certain law firms they think their opposition may hire for consultation so they can disqualify them later if they suddenly represent their opposition. So sadly, this is a strategy that is developed in American legal system that I think should be banned, but there's nothing you can do to ban it.
Dave, I have to ask you this question. We have the situation of, teacher and student. It was brought up in court. I can't remember if it was done with jury present. I found it somewhat humorous.
Which one is that? Now I'm looking at my notes to see where the jury was in. Go ahead, refresh my mind on that.
Okay. One's the professor. The other is the student.
Huntington and Haskell.
Yeah.
Huntington. All right. What's your question? I was wondering whether the jury was in or out.
Well, no. I mean, who has more credibility? The teacher or the student?
Well, I personally think that the in this case, it's more about who is more experienced in court. I think that Haskell was very credible, and the defense couldn't tear into him. I mean, they couldn't bring the guy down, and. But, you know, Tim Huntington was a target, and the state managed to get in there and tackle the guy. So I think it's more or less between the teacher and the student. I mean, I've had people that I've taught how to draw, and in the end, they become artists. So then they might end up being, you know, better than me, something, a talent that they never knew they had. But I think that Haskell is more seasoned inside a courtroom, and I think that's probably where the answer would be,
Haskell was
the experience.
The truth, and Huntington was trying to play hocus pocus with the jury by putting
a pig without
a blanket, without two garbage bags, and without a laundry bag in the trunk, and letting it fully skeletonize, and then take a picture.
Salami. You know, he showed that picture. You know, the it's the salami package that smells. You know, I mean, that was just the most ridiculous kind of testimony I've ever heard. And what I'm seeing is this defense is sitting there picking at nothing and trying to make something out of it. They got nothing to go on. So I don't know. I don't see them going anywhere.
They've got a liar for a client, and they've hired liars as expert witnesses.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you
is about salami. Nobody apparently knows a damn thing about salami because it kind of starts off like a soft bologna, and then as it gets a little harder, it doesn't rot. It just gets harder and harder and harder and harder until it turns into a piece of damn wood. You can't eat it, but it's still salami. And it don't never
I don't want to ruin this for you, but most salami is made with a product called meat glue, and Simon will tell you that you can find blogs on Blogger Newsnet that I've written with my wife about how this stuff is made, but you may want to throw up at and never eat it again. No,
I work with this on peace.
The problem with parent teachers goes like this. The one who has the best facts is the most credible. And, you know, I make this joke about food. If you want to use the junk in the markets and I use organic food, my food will taste better. If I exchange food with you and you have the organic food, your food will taste better. And the same is true for lawyers and facts. The guy with the best facts and the best material ultimately is the one who's right and the one who's going to prevail. So just ask yourself, who's right in this case and who has the best information? And I don't give a damn if they're first cousins, identical twins, and never seen each other before. The one with the best material and the clients and the position is right is going to prevail 99% of the time.
Okay.
Did anybody want some salami after all that?
Pizza.
Right. I'm going to switch gears because we are rapidly running out of time.
You are.
There's something that's bothering me. All right, the defense are, you know, basically pro bono. Apparently, they get a salami sandwich allowance every day, but it's really not that much. This week, I did something that I haven't done in months. I actually watched HLN.
No!
Channel.
Wow.
Yeah,
did you shower afterwards?
You've got Jane Helez Mitchell and Nancy, whatever her name is. You know, oh, here's some pictures of my children. Linda Kenny Barden has spent the entire week running interference for the defense. I've seen her on HLN. I've seen her on CNN. I mean, as far as I know, she's probably on, you know, every Kellogg breakfast cereal advert right now. I mean, why? She's not part of it. What's the game? Dave, any thoughts?
You mean Nancy Grace? Or Jane Velez? Oh, Linda Kenny Bodden.
Linda Kenny, yeah.
I think that because Linda Kenny Bodden is, I think she's looking for her sound bites, too. I think that, Andrea Lyon was on one of the programs the other night. I think it was Dr. Drew. I think it was. I'm not sure.
One
but
of
she's
them.
Still, yeah, she's still kind of like towing the line, you know. And she's not out there really for all this exposure. She went on and she tried to proffer an opinion, you know. But I think Linda Kenny Bodden definitely goes for the media. You know, she wants to be that media star. And obviously, Andrea Lyon hasn't gotten a facelift, and you know who has.
Okay. Well, you know, so you know that self-promotion issue is so common, right, Simon?
It's usually
Silent, you like to call it shameless self-promotion.
Absolutely. I love it. I live for it.
But but that's what this is about. When you have an item as hot as this, people see it as free advertisement and hope that if they throw enough media against the wall, some of it might turn into clients.
Wow. Wow. Had to use that analogy on another case.
We are just about out of time, but to our live listeners, don't panic. Everything is being recorded. And so, you will be able to listen to the entire program. And I want to take one last call. It's from the, 321 area code. Hello, caller. What's your name and what's your question or comment for us?
Well, look, I just want to say something about that goofball Dave Neckel.
Oh, okay.
Well, I lost my call dropped or something. All of a sudden you were gone, so I called back in. So I got a thing or two to say about that little nutcase.
Can you tell us who his father is? That would help.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Dave, is there any truth in the rumor that you are, Kaylee's father?
No. And I've had people say that on some of those idiotic sites that I'm responsible for the murder, all sorts of things. People are funny about that. So, no.
You get blamed for all of it. If you just left the other judge alone, damn it, this would have been over with already.
Well, if anybody had any idea what's going on there, that would be interesting.
Okay, I do want to wrap this up. Let's go around the table, unless anyone has any crushing questions they need to ask. Denny, let's start with you.
Denny's gone, isn't he?
Any parting thoughts for us?
Yeah, he said, be good and don't talk about it behind his back, and he went to take care of some business.
Oh, that's right. Whoops. Okay, Cobra, you're up.
Oh, hell. You know, I just want you to send my money because I'm tired of being a damn whooping boy over here.
So where do you normally go to be abused?
I just wait for Simon's show once a week, and I take all the dick and have a good week, and then I wait for it to happen again on next Sunday.
Well, we won't disappoint you.
Oh, man. The people don't understand what I have to live with.
Wait a minute.
Not now, Chan. Don't get excited about that.
Oh, dear.
Manny, would you care to weigh in with, something adult?
Yeah, nothing changed in this action between last week and this week. If anything, I thought that the defense lost ground, and the more they go on this, the more they're going to improve the plaintiff's case, because the prosecutor should say the prosecution's case. As it turns out, they're pretty damn good counterpunchers, and anyone who's a student of boxing knows that one of the most dangerous things in the world is to deal with a good counterpuncher. They take your best offense and they turn it on you, and I think that right now that's what the prosecution's doing very successfully.
And Dave?
Yeah, you know what? I got to agree with Manny. For one thing, he's a lawyer and he knows this business. But secondly, I mean, I agree with him anyway. I mean, just from sitting there in that courtroom, and you can really sense more than you can. I mean, Manny, you know this, that you can sense more what's going on in the room than you can through an electronic box.
No question.
You can feel the mood changing and shifting or whatever, back and forth. And so far, you know, this defense hasn't done anything. That I think Dr. Spitz started off all right when he said something about this cutting the skull open. But I don't think in the end, it has anything really to do with Kaylee's murder.
No.
You know, that maybe Dr. G should have done something she didn't, but I don't think in the end it matters at all.
I agree.
And Jim.
I think that Jeff Ashton is, and Linda Drane Burdick is, I think that they're prepared for any shock that they might get in this, towards the end of this. I don't think that they're going to be shocked. I think that they're prepared for it. I mean, they're pretty smart people, and they've done a well job. I mean, very good job at during this whole thing. So I'm hoping and praying, as usual, that Kaylee will get the justice that she does deserve in all this, and we'll see, hopefully, in a couple of weeks.
Okay. My theory is there's a freight train coming downhill with absolutely no brakes, and the defense are going, oh, crap, something bad is coming our way.
Except for one thing, Simon, they're used to it. They're used to it by now, you know? So maybe it won't hurt them as much, but they're still going to get hit by that freight train.
Right.
Well,
okay.
Yeah. But, you know, usually if you know the truth, the answer in a trial is not surprising. And they know the truth. If she murdered the child, which everybody feels she did, then the family know by looking in their eyes and dealing with her. They're no fools. If they can't tell their child has committed this crime, they're bigger idiots than people say they are.
I think they know, too. They just haven't come to deal with it yet.
Wow, that would make them super big idiots.
Good point, Simon.
Okay.
Or they may have the largest area of denial in mankind, okay?
Well, that could be. I'll have to think about it. Okay, need to kill this program. I want to thank everyone for listening in today. We will be back next week, same time, same channel. Until then, be safe, be healthy, and have fun.
And happy Father's Day.
Yep.
Happy Father's Day to all my fellow fathers.
All right, bro.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.